You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Up Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Friday, everybody. And for Brewers fans like myself, I'm so sorry. What a letdown. But we have a great show to help pick you all up after that devastating loss. Listen, folks, the Mets are going on my list of teams that I will hate for all eternity, joined in that very troubling group by the St. Louis Cardinals and Chicago Cubs. Mets, we're coming for you next year. But right now, here on the Maggie Dawn Show, I've got Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. You're not going to want to go anywhere for 2 hours, folks. We have a really special interview coming up as well with Senator Tammy Duckworth in this hour. I've got pollster Charles Franklin from Marquette University Law School, Stephen Price, a millionaire, talking money with me in today's segment of Maggie and the Millionaires. And of course, it is Friday, so we've got local and overlooked. What's good in your hood will be coming up at the end of the show. But let's jump right in, Ben. There has been so much going on this week in the world of politics and public policy. Thanks for making time for us.
I'm delighted to be with you today. And boy, is it intense right now. This is the home stretch in the state that is the tipping point for the entire country. And we see the work that happens in the next month, the next 31 days to as really the defining outcome determinative question in the future of American democracy.
Yes, I've got my presidential election countdown up. It is 31 days, 10 hours and 51 minutes, and now about 35 seconds until voting begins on election day. Of course, folks, you in the state of Wisconsin can vote early via absentee ballot. You've got any questions about that, you can, of course, visit Civic Media's website at civicmedia.us/vote. You can always check out and get all the information you need to register, where your polling place is, all that good stuff at myvote.wi.gov. Ben, I wanted to play you a little sound. Aaron, this is going to be J.D. Vance talking about the 2020 outcome. And of course, earlier this week, he wouldn't answer who won the presidential election in 2020, but it seems yesterday he had a different answer. Let's take a listen.
Who won the 2020 election? We're gonna go to town. Could you just answer, did Donald Trump win, yes or no?
Yes.
He did win.
Yep.
So will you concede? Will you concede? If your opponent gets more votes, will you concede?
I really feel bad for you, man.
I just want to know, if your opponent gets more votes, will you concede?
Wow. Ben, your reactions.
Look, J.D. Vance got this job for one reason only. And it's like the viral meme says, when you're applying for a job, always ask why the position is vacant. The reason why he is the vice presidential nominee is that he's made clear that he's willing to shred the Constitution to make Trump a dictator. His one job, the true job qualification, is that he's already shown that he's willing to break every one of his own principles, that he's willing to turn his back on everything he's ever purported to stand for in order to make Trump more powerful. Trump likes the fact that Vance was anti-Trump before, but now has shattered all of those convictions that he used to adhere to and advocate for in order to be Trump's lackey. Because that's what Trump is looking for, someone who has no fixed principles other than a willingness to do whatever it is that Trump wants. And that is now on display for the whole country in a new way. And it's why it's so urgent that Vance and Trump lose this election, because if they get into power, they're going to do everything they can to hold onto it. This is not a drill. And I think what we've seen from Benson last week makes that chillingly clear. It's exactly why Liz Cheney was in our state yesterday to make clear the stakes in this fight.
Just one follow-up comment on that. This is what J.D. Vance has been saying out loud, but in coded language for the last couple of years. And this is the repeated line from J.D. Vance that we are in a, quote, late-stage republic. And what he means by that is the end of democracy as we have known it in this Democratic Republic. He's finally being called to task and asked to say, what does that mean? And it means exactly what Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, just said, and that is he'll do anything, include installing Donald Trump as a dictator in order to win. The man has no democratic principles or values. But let's talk about that in terms of this incredible movement coming out of Republicans, not just Republicans like Liz and Dick Cheney, but all throughout government levels, right? Liz Cheney here in Ripon, Wisconsin yesterday, the birthplace of the Republican Party, coming on the heels of a number of Republican elected officials, including one sitting Republican district attorney, signing a letter this week saying they support and will be voting for Kamala Harris. Ben, tell us about the meaning, the importance of someone like Liz Cheney speaking in Ripon, the birthplace of the Republican Party.
Look, the Republican Party was once the party of Lincoln. It was the party that was founded in the little white schoolhouse in Ripon, Wisconsin in the 19th century. It was founded as an anti-slavery party. It was a party of freedom that stood for the best of America's traditions in a counter to the worst of its most horrific or kind of original stains and sins. But that Republican Party has lost its way. You know, there were strains of that original Republican Party that went all the way through John McCain, but and maybe a little tail echo in Mitt Romney in 2012. But it's been Trump for the last three elections, and Trump spits on the legacy of people who fight and die for their country. He is the opposite of the best tradition of the Republican Party. And in this election, Trump is trying to answer no to the question that Abraham Lincoln posed and in his address at Gettysburg. He was talking about making sure that government by the people, of the people, for the people shall not perish from this earth. Trump wants to end it. He wants to drive a stake through its heart. So he is the anti-Lincoln in that sense. And he's constantly talking about division in exact counter to Lincoln's message and the war that he fought to ensure that the Union would remain strong. Trump is a blight to the principles of the Pledge of Allegiance and our national anthem. And what Liz Cheney was here doing was saying, look, I am a hardcore Republican. I've never voted for a Democrat. She talked about campaigning for George W. Bush in Wisconsin in 2004, 20 years ago, the state where she was born, the state of Wisconsin.
Yes.
She's been on the other side from you and me and many of our listeners for decades. But in this moment, all of the arguments that we can have are kind of up here, and this is down here. This is the underlying foundation, the question of whether we will be a democracy or not, a republic or not, whether we will be a place that is ruled by consent of the governed, by the people choosing their leader, or whether we will be Trump's day one dictatorship that he's promised, a place where the Constitution is terminated. And when Liz Cheney comes in and gives the speech that she did, she's talking to Republican voters who know right in their guts that Trump is wrong, that Trump is a danger to the country. It's not just looking back at January 6th. Scott Walker said people are over January 6th. It's that January 6th shows us what he's willing to do to trample our Constitution and hold on to power. They say, what do you call a failed coup? Practice. January 6th was their first attempt to end American democracy. And you can believe them when they say it is not the last attempt. They're trying to do this right now. And the only way to stop them is to vote in such big numbers that the election becomes unstealable by the far right. That is the challenge before us. And Cheney was speaking to the hearts and souls of patriotic Republicans who know that even if they disagree with Democrats 6 ways from Sunday, they believe in the idea of America. Democrats do, a lot of Republicans do, and we should come together and vote on that basis to allow America to be its best version of itself instead of collapsing into a Trumpian nightmare.
Cheney said yesterday, quote, our republic faces a threat unlike any we have faced before. A former president who attempted to stay in power by unraveling the foundations of our republic by refusing to accept the lawful results confirmed by dozens of courts of the 2020 election. We cannot turn away from this truth. Putting patriotism ahead of partisanship is not an aspiration. It is our duty. At the very heart of our survival as a republic is the peaceful transition of power. Frankly, each week it seems that there are more and more Republicans speaking out and giving their full-throated support to Vice President Harris. Of course, we've been talking about Dick and Liz Cheney. There's Adam Kinzinger, Judge Michael Luttig, a very traditional conservative, former Attorney General under George W. Bush, Alberto Gonzalez, by no means a centrist. Georgia's former Governor Jeff Duncan, Mr. McCain, Senator McCain's son, Jimmy McCain, Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh, David French, George Will, in a blazing op-ed last week in the Washington Post, and dozens of former aides. One of the most shocking figures to me is a large group of nearly 750 former national security leaders signed a letter collectively endorsing Vice President Harris. I mean, that is just a resounding sort of volume of Republicans and very conservative administration officials crossing numerous administrations, working for numerous different administrations, a bunch of Reagan White House aides. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah.
Ben, if you had a chance to speak to any of the traditional conservatives, Republicans out there that may be listening right now, people who might not be inclined to vote, independents and swing voters, what's your message to them, Ben?
My message to, you know, conservatives who are thinking about what to do is I would say, look, maybe the many Republicans who are out there supporting Trump, maybe they're right that the rhetoric is overblown, that Trump was actually not do all the things he's saying that he would do. But you have to look squarely in the face the fact that the people who were closest to Trump, the people who were around him in the room, in the Situation Room, are trumpeting that this guy should never get back into power. That's not happening with people who've ever been around Harris or Walz. On our side, there's not a kind of alarm bell going off, but there is on the other side. And, you know, for Democrats, I think we take those extremely seriously. Maybe conservatives think that we're taking them too seriously, but those alarm bells are absolutely there. And I think all of us need to ask ourselves, if we elect Trump and we become the kind of country that Trump is talking about, can't we look back and realize what we could have done differently? Let's just do it differently now.
That's Ben Wickler, chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Thanks so much, Ben. You're going to want to keep it locked. My groundbreaking interview with Senator Tammy Duckworth talking about Donald Trump's fitness to serve and what he has said to those who have paid the ultimate price to preserve and protect this democracy is up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. One of the greatest gifts and privileges I get in doing this job every day is when I get to talk to some of my personal heroes and especially women in service that I truly look up to. Today, we are very lucky to have with us U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois. She is an Iraq War vet. She has won the Purple Heart. And very impressively, she was one of the first handful of women in the Army to fly combat missions during Operation Iraqi Freedom. She served in the Army Reserves for 23 years, retired at Lieutenant Colonel in 2014. And before she joined the Senate, she spent two terms representing Illinois' 8th Congressional District in the U.S. House of Representatives. And she has made veterans issues one of her top priorities. She has got tax credits for employers that hire veterans. She helped establish a 24-hour crisis hotline for veterans, amongst numerous other advances for veterans. And so, Senator, I would be remiss if I did not start here and ask you, as a veteran who served her country so honorably, when you look at the Harris-Walz ticket and you compare it to their opponents, Mr. Trump and Mr. Vance, what distinctions jump to the top of your mind in terms of what they promised to do and their prior actions relative to veterans?
Well, I thank you for that question and that very warm introduction. Well, the difference is who delivers and who makes empty promises. Governor Walz has delivered. You know, when he was in the House, he led the effort on the PACT Act that resulted us in eventually just recently passing under the Biden-Harris administration access to the VA for veterans who have been exposed to toxic substances, whether that was in Iraq or Afghanistan or in Tomah, Wisconsin. You know, if you were exposed to toxic substances during your military service, you're now actually covered. And that's thanks to the PACT Act that Tim Walz worked on for a very long time. He also worked on an issue that has been near and dear to my heart now for well over a decade, and that is homeless veterans. You know, I think that we are all dishonored as Americans anytime a veteran has to lay his head down to sleep on the very street that he defended in uniform. And I need to make sure that everybody understands how hard Tim Walz has voted for and worked on homelessness among our veteran community. On the other hand, you got Donald Trump, who thinks veterans who sacrificed for this country and were wounded, you know, are losers and suckers. He's the guy that refused to go to a veteran cemetery in France because it was raining during a commemoration of World War II. You know, you've got folks like J.D. Vance, who continues to spout this idea that we should be privatizing the VA and put veterans out on the streets trying to find their own health care with the promise of payment instead of having a medical system where you can go and get your care taken care of and then be referred out to your local doctor if that's where you want to go. But you should be out there fending for yourself trying to find, you know, services or illnesses that you received in the military that maybe the VA is the only place that has expertise on when it comes to things like toxic exposure. And so I see a stark difference between the two campaigns, and in particular between Tim Walz and J.D. Vance.
Yeah, it strikes me as ironic at best, disgusting at worst, to think of the Harris-Walz opponents talking about defending borders and being concerned there when they won't agree that a government's highest principle, in addition to defending its borders, is to support and ensure that we pay for the care for those that have stood that post. I wanted to ask you very briefly, Senator, recent reporting has come out that J.D. Vance is a acolyte of a gentleman named Curtis Yarvin, who has said this, quote, "If Americans want a new government, they're going to have to get over their dictator phobia," endorsing effectively a dictatorship. This is who J.D. Vance is following, is quoting, is learning from. As a veteran, how does J.D. Vance's big bear hug of dictatorship and Donald Trump's bear hug and endorsement of dictatorship sit with you, Senator?
It disgusts me and it's alarming, and I would do everything I can to stop them because that is not what America is about. And in fact, it's not why we became a country. And we've all known that Donald Trump loves authoritarianism and dictatorship, right? Donald Trump's been out there telling people, oh, yeah, if you vote for me, you won't ever have to vote again. You won't have to worry about voting. Never mind that voting is a privilege and an honor, and it's a basic fundamental exercise of your freedoms as an American. And I cannot believe that anyone, including Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, who took oaths to defend the Constitution of this great nation from all enemies, foreign and domestic, would embrace dictatorship. That is not what America is about. And I don't think that that is what the vast majority of Americans want. And frankly, I hope that Americans will go to the polls this first Tuesday in November and make sure that that does not happen.
Senator, with our last minute or two remaining, what is your message to Wisconsin voters who are still on the fence, or potentially conservative, more traditional conservative voters who are weighing their options this November?
Well, what I'm going to tell them is, if you love the Constitution of the United States, if you love our democracy, then you're not going to vote for Donald Trump or J.D. Vance. You're going to vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Tim Walz spent over 20 years defending and protecting this country in uniform. I'm so thrilled that we're going to have, for the first time, a sergeant major as Vice President of the United States. Kamala Harris has been a strong prosecutor. She, in her entire professional career, has only ever had one client, and that was the people, as opposed to J.D. Vance and Donald Trump, who have only ever looked out for themselves. Donald Trump, again, is the guy who thinks that if you vote for him now, you won't ever have to worry about voting again. That is not what conservatism is about. It's about protecting our fundamental rights as Americans to determine our own future, free from interference from the federal government. And if you look at all the things that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance has embraced, whether it is having the government in your doctor's offices or overturning key decisions like Roe v. Wade, they are not conservatives. These are folks who do not represent the vast majority of Wisconsinites.
Thank you. That is Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, Purple Heart recipient, Iraq War veteran. Thank you, Madam Senator, for your time this afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more after these important messages.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I'm going to do my song now.
Okay, yay!
Well, what's up, Wisconsin? Hope y'all are doing well on this beautiful, sunny Friday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I always enjoy talking to my very special next guest. But before we get there, folks, if you've been watching the devastation in North Carolina and up and down our eastern seaboard, and you would like to help, Civic Media's got you covered. You can just go to civicmedia.us/help. And we've got links to the American Red Cross and Samaritan's Purse. Again, that's at civicmedia.us/help. Again, all of our prayers and support go to those victimized by Hurricane Helene. Because newsflash, climate change is actually a thing. But enough about that. We're here to talk about the most recent Marquette University Law School poll, considered one of the best in the country, and I'm joined by their lead data cruncher, my friend and yours, Marquette law professor and pollster Charles Franklin. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Charles.
Good to be here, Maggie. Thanks for having me.
So big headline here is that Kamala Harris's about 4-point lead over Donald Trump seems to be holding consistent from the last poll you took. So this is the poll that that includes the presidential debate. Is that correct?
That's right. This was all done after the presidential debate. I think obviously not before the vice presidential debate. So we also saw in that early September poll, that was after the convention, but before the debate. And now we have an after debate. And it was 4 points in both of those polls, a pretty steady number. Back in July, right after Harris got in the race, but before the convention, Trump led by 1 point with registered voters. Harris led by 1 point with likely voters. So it was a real toss-up then. So we have seen a little bit of movement from July to early September, and now stability through the month of September.
Of course, always as a data cruncher myself, got to note the margin of error in the poll, 4.4%. Can you just tell people what is the margin of error? How do they interpret a poll result where the lead that Harris has maintained since that last September poll before the debate is about 4%?
Yeah, so as you say, the margin of error is 4.4. The conventional way to think about that is if the margin is less than that margin of error, you should take it with a real grain of salt. The fact that we're at 4 is a little less than 4.4, so it could easily be 3 or 2 or 1 or even 0. Of course, it could also go the other way. It could be a bigger lead. But you want to be careful on this and look at how is it that we could be still in a really tied race despite the 4-point lead. Well, margin of error tells you that. If we were seeing a 7-point lead, that would be outside the margin of error. You might question whether the poll was right at that point, but in terms of margin of error sense, that would be outside the margin of error.
There was also a pretty surprising result with respect to the Senate race here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm joined this half hour by Marquette University Law School pollster Charles Franklin. They just released a new poll. Was it on Tuesday, Charles?
Wednesday.
Wednesday, excuse me. Where can folks find the poll results if they want to look at them, look at the results themselves?
Go to law.marquette.edu/poll, P-O-L-L. And you'll see the press release, all 26 pages of it, on that landing page. But if you have an insatiable appetite, click on the results and data tab at the top. And there you see absolutely everything, all the questions, all the answers, cross tabs galore, and the prized methodology statement.
So important. I enjoy looking at that. And folks, I encourage you to as well, because the construction of the questions to avoid suggesting bias in the questions themselves is an absolutely crucial part of polling. I think it's why the Marquette poll is so fantastic up there in its reliability with the Quinnipiac poll as well. But this surprise result in the Baldwin-Hovde race, tell folks about it.
Well, it's a 7-point lead this time. It was 4 points in early September. Over the course of the race before this, we also saw the polls vary between a 4-point and a 7-point Baldwin lead. So these two polls are in line with what we've seen during the year, but apparently with a shift towards Baldwin. Notice a shift towards Baldwin, even though the presidential race didn't shift at all. These are exactly the same respondents. So this suggests a little movement on the Senate side. What we're seeing is a little bit of an uptick in independents supporting Baldwin. They had been supporting her modestly all year, but are now up around 60% support for her. That is adding a little bit to what she's getting. She's completely consolidated Democratic support and is getting a little bit of Republican crossover vote, though it's fairly small, under 10% for sure.
Fascinating. Of course, Senator Baldwin and Mr. Hovde have a debate coming up, which will be hosted by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Foundation on October 18th. That's a Friday. Folks, mark your calendars to check that out, especially if you might be on the fence among Senator Baldwin and Mr. Hovde. Potentially in response to these polling numbers, the PAC, aligned with Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell, has pledged to put some $17 million into TV, radio, and digital ads in the Senate race. So, folks, if you think you're already seeing a lot of ads and pop-ups, more on the way. This is separate and apart from a Republican group backed by Dick and Liz Eline, of course, they own the Uline Corporation, excuse me. They have spent about $79 million in races across the country over this 2-year cycle. They're driving money into the Senate race. That will be one to watch. I wanted to ask you the other thing I took note of, Charles, was voter enthusiasm is higher now than in your prior polls.
It's a big story here. When a lot hasn't changed very much, we've had a pretty close presidential race all year long, moderately close Senate race. But in the spring through June, Democratic enthusiasm was well below Republican enthusiasm, 10 or more points less. And overall, the state was 10 to 15 points less enthusiastic than it was in 2020. With the replacement of Biden, we saw Democratic enthusiasm go up by 22 points from June to July. Republicans went up by 7 points after the assassination attempt and the Republican convention. But then Democrats moved up even more by Labor Day. However, since Labor Day in this most recent poll, Republicans have picked up some additional enthusiasm. So where we stand now is Democrats are just slightly more enthused than Republicans, but that's parity between the parties compared to a substantial Republican advantage early while Biden was in. Finally, independents are becoming a little more involved. They've been in the mid 30% range for enthusiasm all year. This poll, for the first time, they're up to 50% enthusiastic. That's still well below Democrats and Republicans, but it is the first sign that we've seen of independents really beginning to tune in to the races this November.
In all the polls you do, Charles, you also ask about whether people approve of the job or have a generally positive view of both candidates and current elected officials. Give us a little insight into movement or not so much movement in the approval ratings. And I specifically want to ask you about Governor Tony Evers, because there was a bit of a change there.
Right. And with Evers and other governors or executives, we ask the question in terms of approve of the job they're doing. All year long, Evers has been just a little bit above 50% in approval, in the low 40s disapproval. It's been very stable for him with that margin of approval. But this month, for the first time this year, we've seen him dip just a little under 50% to high 40s. I think it's 48%. And his disapproval is up a little tick, but still below his approval number. I will watch that carefully to see if it looks like a one-time blip or if it represents some kind of shift. Right now, the governor and almost everything in the state is being overshadowed by the presidential and the Senate race. So I'm not sure that there's anything to point to about why his approval might have ticked down. But we should watch it. He has been consistently the most liked and highest approval rating of any of our statewide candidates or the national candidates for that matter. So a little tick down there is worth watching. We also saw a tick up in the percent saying the state's off on the wrong track, a little down on saying we're headed in the right direction. So maybe there's a little shift going on there for some reason.
Tell us about voter attitudes related to the vice presidential candidates.
Well, there's quite a gap. Here we're using favorability. Generally speaking, do you have a favorable or unfavorable view? Or haven't you heard enough about them to have an opinion? And here, most everybody's underwater. J.D. Vance is at negative 13, meaning 13% more unfavorable than favorable. But 11% still say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion. Tim Walz, and remember this is before the debate,
right,
is the one of the four presidential and vice presidential candidates with a positive rating, plus 7, 45-38, but with 16% that say they didn't know enough about Walz to have an opinion of him. This is the second poll in a row where Walz is the one that's positive and all the others have been negative. And for comparison, Harris is at minus 3. And Trump is at minus 11. The main difference there is that almost nobody lacks an opinion of Trump and only 3% lack an opinion of Harris. So the vice presidential candidates are both a bit less known than their presidential counterparts.
Let's talk about those same evaluative criteria for Senators Baldwin and Mr. Hovde. What are their approval ratings looking like from this last poll?
Yeah, and here there's been some real dynamics this year. Baldwin is dead even, 47 favorable, 47 unfavorable, 6% without an opinion, so a net of 0. Hovde is at negative 9, 36 favorable, 45 unfavorable. That's the same as it was earlier in the month, and a slightly better than where it was in July. But still 18% don't have an opinion of Hovde. They'd say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion. However, that number's down from over 80% in January. So we have certainly seen his campaign reach a lot of voters that didn't know much about him before, though he still has a ways to go with 18% undecided. All that advertising you mentioned earlier could affect this. Over the course of the campaign, though, we've seen his unfavorables and favorables both rising, with the unfavorable more than favorable. So he hasn't done much to catch that up and reach the point where he might reach break even like Baldwin is, or even positive like Walz is. Baldwin's striking thing is how little her favorability has moved over the course of the year. She's been slightly negative a time or two. She's been a little positive a time or two, but close to dead, even as she is right now, is sort of the norm. So she has a really stable pattern. Hovde, like almost any non-incumbent candidate, has had a lot more change because he's introducing himself to the public.
That's pollster Charles Franklin, who runs one of the nation's most respected polls. This poll focused on the state of Wisconsin, not a national poll. You can find the poll results as well as their lengthy press release explaining same at law.marquette.edu/poll. We're going to be back with more with pollster Charles Franklin after these brief messages. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. What I want to ask Charles next is, how consolidated is the support between our two presidential candidates? We'll talk that and whether or not you and I, have stopped talking to someone because of all this politics. All next, here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Yeah, 360, when you're in the mirror, do you know what you see? When you're in the mirror, you're just looking at me. I'm everywhere, I'm so Julia. Street. I'm everywhere, I'm so Julia.
Everybody, welcome and welcome back. If you're joining us again, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This half hour joined by Marquette University Law School pollster Charles Franklin. Again, thank you, Charles. Always enjoy talking to you. One of the things that I think is really interesting in this latest poll is the level of consolidation of support. Tell people about really what that's measuring and what your latest poll found.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of reluctance to vote for the two major party candidates earlier in the year. We also saw some level of crossover voting earlier in the year. To give you an example, the third party vote for Kennedy and for the other third party candidates was around 25% early in the spring. That's fallen to just 6% now. And so that's one sense of consolidation. That difference is gone to the major party candidates pretty much. We've also seen partisans coming home to their party, though there's less of that change. Right now, 6% of Republicans say they'll vote for Harris. Only 1% of Democrats say they'll vote for Trump. Those numbers were a bit higher, though Republican crossover was never more than 8 or 9% all year. Democratic crossover was small, but was 3, 4, occasionally 5% early in the year. And we see that with the Senate race, too. The patterns are exactly the same. Partisans come home to their party over the course of the election as they start paying more attention to the campaign and hearing more about it. There's a little asymmetry. There are some Republicans unhappy with Trump. Early in the year, 30% of Republicans told us they had an unfavorable view of Trump. Most of them were voting for other people in the primary in the spring. But that's down to 20% or less now of Republicans with an unfavorable view of Trump. Even of that 20%, though, we only see 6% crossing over. So that's the power of party, to hold you with your party, even if you don't like the candidate, because it's so hard to bring yourself to go across the aisle and vote for the other party's candidate.
Fascinating numbers there. 20% currently of GOP feeling unfavorably about Donald Trump, yet only 6% of traditionally identified Republicans and GOP supporters say they will cross over and vote for Kamala Harris. Just fascinating. The other tidbit, I'm going to call it, in your poll was something I don't know if this is even traditionally included in polls, but I thought it certainly spoke to this moment that we are all in and trying to survive through. And that is, hey, have you had to stop talking to someone because of politics? Tell us more, Charles.
Yeah, this was a question that we actually started asking in 2012 in the run-up to the recall election of Governor Walker, because our politics seemed so divided at that point.
Isn't that cute? I mean, whoo!
Yes. And so the way we word the question is there someone you've stopped talking about politics with because of disagreement about the upcoming election? We've asked that in 2012 for the recall. Then in 16 and 20, we asked it for the presidential race. We repeated it this time. Despite how conflictual the recall was, it was about 35% that said they'd stop talking to someone. We thought that was a sizable number back then. But it was still 34 and then 36 in 16 and 20. This month, 46%, a 10 percentage point increase in that number. And again, it's going up against some tough competition. We were kind of divided and touchy about our politics in 12, 16, and 20. So I was a little surprised to see it bump up a full 10 percentage points this time. It's awfully close to evenly divided now about backing off on having political conversations.
And this observation that you made was that Democrats are considerably more likely to say that they have stopped talking to Republican acquaintances or family members. I thought that was quite striking. Wow.
Democrats have been a little more likely to say that all along, but they're over 50% now. And this time, for the first time, independents are also around 50%. Republicans about half as likely to say they've stopped talking to somebody.
That is a story probably worth some thinking about right there, given the tone of political rhetoric. I have to say, unfortunately, I'm unsurprised by those polling numbers. Last but not least, Charles, folks are wanting to know, all the people out there, I know you want to know, is this our last poll before the election, or
no,
can we expect another?
Of course not. Of course not. No, we're actually in the field with a national poll right now, and we'll be out with our final Wisconsin poll on the Wednesday before the election. I think that's October 30th.
Well, Charles, I'll ask you now, can you spare some time on the 30th to come on in and talk about the poll? We'd love to have you.
We'll see what we can work out. I certainly want to talk to you that week. And, you know, the last thing, you know, polls don't vote, people do. So it's really up to the voters to go out and turn out, no matter who you're supporting. Democracy is better when people vote.
That's MU Law School's pollster, Charles Franklin, a friend of mine and a friend of each and every one of you, helping make us smarter every day. Thanks, Charles. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back at the top of the hour for Maggie and the Millionaires, talking money with CEO Stephen Price about why it makes sense for all businesses to pay workers a fair wage. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.